Hello, this is Don on Tuesday, August 8, and I'm going to be reading the Vermilion County Commercial News. But first, we're going to start with some articles regarding Vermilion County that are in the Champaign News Gazette today. The first one has to do with the 15th Congressional District, headlined Shimkus, No Reason Not to Seek Re-Election. This is Dateline Georgetown. U.S. Representative John Shimkus, who once pledged to term limit himself to no more than six terms in office, said Monday night he will run for a 12th term in 2018. He said, "There's no expectation that I'm not going to run." This from the Collinsville Republican, speaking Monday night after appearing with Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue at the Georgetown Fair. He went on to say, "I'm not announcing it formally here, but there's no reason why I wouldn't." Going on, he said, "We've had a very good legislative year personally, with bills about brownfields and the Safe Drinking Water Act, ozone, and I'm trying to get the nuclear waste bill done. I've got enough on my plate to make it very interesting," said Shimkus. Shimkus' nuclear waste bill will revive a long dormant proposal to store waste from nuclear power plants at a single repository at Yucca Mountain, Nevada. Nuclear waste now is stored on-site at the nation's nuclear plants, and the nuclear power industry has pushed for years to establish a federal waste dump. He said, "I'm in a great position now where I can really move legislation. I've been fighting this battle for 20 years, speaking of the Nevada nuclear waste plan. Why would I walk away now when I'm so close to having success?" The House Energy and Commerce Committee, of which Shimkus is a ranking member, approved his nuclear waste bill 49-4. Shimkus said, "In an era when people think things aren't getting done, that's something that's eluded us for a long time." Shimkus accompanied Secretary Perdue to three stops around Illinois on Monday, where they talked about the next farm bill. And he heard from farmers about trade, regulation, and other concerns. Perdue said his tour of Illinois was part of a trip through five Midwestern states. Perdue said, "It's the heartbeat and backbone of American prosperity, and the good news is we've got a president from New York City who understands that." Perdue went on to say, "My commitment to the farmers of America is that you do what you do best. You grow it, and we're going to sell it." Perdue was awarded an inscribed director's chair and a lifetime pass to the Georgetown Fair. Shimkus said that with the Trump administration opening more federal lands in western states to coal mining, Illinois' coal industry may be as strong as it's going to be. "All I know is that the war on coal is over. I don't think you're going to see the coal mining as it was in the 60s or 70s, but we're producing more coal this year than last year, and it probably will stabilize the market for the short term. It means that the rest of our coal mines won't close down." Three Democrats in the huge 15th Congressional District have created campaign committees to challenge Shimkus in the overwhelmingly Republican area. Shimkus, the most senior member of Illinois' congressional delegation, also said he hasn't heard whether the Trump administration is close to announcing a new U.S. attorney for the Central District of Illinois. That concludes that. The next story, also from the Champaign News Gazette, has to do with a lemonade stand. Danville girl is donating last weekend's proceeds to buy Amtrike for a child with special needs. And there's a lovely picture accompanying this article of Allie Cooper, age 7 of Danville, and she's posing at her lemonade stand with a plate full of lemons and a big jar full of cash. Posing with the money she recently earned from her lemonade stand. The second grader is donating her earnings, $736, to the Danville's chapter of Ambex to buy an Amtrike for a child with special needs. The article says, "Allie Cooper made enough money at her lemonade stand this past weekend to buy new bikes for her and three siblings. But instead of spending the hard-earned money on herself, the 7-year-old Danville girl is using the more than $700 to buy a shiny red Amtrike for a child with special needs. I just thought it would be nice that Allie, a second grader at Northeast Elementary Magnet School in Danville, Mom Mandy said her daughter received the lemonade stand for her birthday on June 24th. It was the number one item on her wish list. Allie said, I'd just like to sell lemonade. When Mandy started searching for stands online, she went into sticker shock. Since her husband's pretty handy, she started looking around for ideas on Pinterest and found one made with wooden pallets. She called her friends, Frank and Renee Wright, who own Wright's Heating and Air, knowing they use pallets at their business and have extras on hand. Renee Wright was happy to donate some for the project, and when she saw what Greg created out of them, a white stand with blue and yellow accents decorated with pastel-colored pom-poms, she suggested that Allie set it up at their business along busy Gilbert Street. Allie had her stand open from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday. Dad made 15 gallons of lemonade, and Mom made an assortment of baked goods. Her siblings, Maddie, 16, and twins Lila and Grayson, age 9, were also on hand to help. Her goal, to raise $700. By the time she closed, she had exceeded that amount by $36. Mandy said, we were absolutely blown away, adding that all but $30 was raised on Saturday. We thought there would be a pretty good turnout, but we had no idea what to expect as far as donations went. People were so generous. We had friends and family drop by. We also had a lot of Ambucks family drop by, which was so much fun. Mandy, said she, her husband, and Allie had decided ahead of time to donate the earnings to the local Ambucks chapter so that it could give away a specially designed cycle. Ambucks, a national service organization dedicated to creating opportunities for mobility and independence for people with disabilities, launched its AmTrike program more than 20 years ago to provide the cycles to children who have physical and or developmental challenges and to provide the bikes at no cost. Riding the cycle, which is fitted to the recipient's needs, helps strengthen muscles, improves motor skills and balance, and builds endurance and self-esteem. Allie got the idea after spending time with Ambucks campers on their field trips to the Danville Municipal Pool at Garfield Park, where she and her siblings swim. She was also inspired by the Wright's daughter, Faith, who organized a Polar Plunge fundraiser in Lake Vermilion for her 16th birthday on February 3rd and raised $1,050 to donate two AmTrikes. The Charmin Academy Junior and was familiar with the program through her dad, who's a member of the organization. She previously had donated $500 she earned at the summer camp in 2016 for the first cycle, and she plans to use this year's earnings for her fourth. Diane Carlton, chairman of the Danville chapter's AmTrike committee, said Allie's gift will likely be used to buy an AmTrike for a 3-year-old whose family recently requested one. She added she was amazed by the gesture, especially from someone so young. We've had such generous people with large hearts in our community, and it's great to see that rubbing off on our children, said Carlton. I think it's so awesome that Faith inspired Allie to follow in her footsteps, adding she hopes Allie's gesture does the same. Allie said she's looking forward to presenting Ambucks members with her donations at their August 16 meeting, and even more to helping present the AmTrike to the recipient, which will take place at a later date. Her mother doesn't think Allie's first fundraiser will be her last. She's already been asking when we can do this again, said Mindy Cooper with a laugh. And that concludes the story about Allie and her lemonade stand. On a more somber note, there's an article in the paper about a Danville death. Authorities say man found shot to death had local ties. Dateline Danville. The man whose body was found Monday in a grassy field just west of the Fair Oaks public housing complex had local ties, according to Danville Public Safety Director Larry Thomason. But Thomason did not elaborate about the ties of the 24-year-old Brandon M. Dallas Hagen, who was found by Danville police about 8 a.m. Monday, the victim of a fatal gunshot wound, according to Vermilion County Coroner Jane McFadden. Thomason said Danville police were originally called to the area in the 900 block of Fowler Avenue, which borders the west side of Fair Oaks, in response to reports of shots fired. When they arrived, they found Mr. Dallas Hagen's body in a grassy field on the west side of Fowler. Hallie Lee, who lives along Fowler, said she was up late Sunday night and heard a loud boom, boom, sometime between 1:30 and 2 a.m. as she was sitting in her kitchen. She said it almost seemed as if it was coming through her window. She wondered if it could be fireworks, but it seemed too loud for that. When she got up Monday morning, police and squad cars were all over the block, and that's when she knew something had Mary Hill said, pretty soon the street was full of people, and she's lived in that home since 1971 and said she feels pretty safe. An autopsy on Mr. Dallas Hagen is scheduled for today, McFadden said. Police were at the scene where he was found into the early afternoon Monday, searching both sides of Fowler for evidence. Crime scene tape was placed around an area on both sides of Fowler and near a house just south of the Word of Life Mount Zion Ministries building. Thomason said no other information is being released, and police continue their investigation. Anyone with information about the incident is asked to call Danville Police or call Crime Stoppers at 217-446-TIPS. That's 217-446-TIPS. And that concludes that. On the front page of the commercial news today, there's a story about the Danville High School band getting ready for the fall. The title of the article is Strike Up the Band, Marching Vikings Practice Elaborate Show at Camp. And there's two pictures on the front page with members of the Danville High School Color Guard outside practicing their routine during the end of the first week of band camp. The Color Guard are standing there with their flags in place, ready to move. A second picture also is a picture of some of the band members, with Scott Danner, who is the percussion instructor, working with members of the Danville High School's bass drum line. And there are several drummers standing out there practicing, including sophomore Briar White, junior Caleb Medina, freshman Dominic Lafoe, and junior Ethan LeBounty. And this is apparently at the end of the first week of their band camp. The article says Danville High School's Band of Vikings will spend hours and even weeks practicing and perfecting an 8.5-minute high school marching band routine that will be performed numerous times at competitions throughout the school year. Members of the marching band and color guard have been hard at work on that routine and other musical numbers during a 2-week-long marching band camp at the high school that wraps up Friday. Danville High School band director Ryan Kropf said marching band routines have evolved over the years so they've become almost theatrical. He said it's more than movement and playing. It's more about drama, staging, and visual development, and getting on and off the field in 15 minutes. He said every show we go to, there's time limits you have to meet, adding that 8.5 minutes is the optimum length for a routine. This year, the Band of Vikings boasts 77 members, which is 10 to 15 more than the last 2 years. Kropf, who is in his third year as the high school's band director, attributes the piqued interest in joining the marching band to his recruitment efforts and the theatrical flow of the band's performances. He said, we're doing some different recruiting techniques, and I've spent more time with the middle school band members. He said a lot of them have never done marching band before, but they have done some form of performing arts. For example, Kropf said the color guard is the visual storyteller, and the winds and percussion are the acting soundtrack to what the color guard does. The color guard is open to anyone, he said. If you love theater and dance, then color guard is for you. At least 3 males are in this year's color guard, including Danville High School junior Trevor Snyder, who is in his second year as a member. Trevor said, it gives me something to do and keeps me out of trouble, as he took a break from practicing in his routine. He went on to say, most of all, it gives me confidence. Although there's a lot of togetherness for the group of 77 teenagers between practicing and performing at games and in competitions away from home, Trevor said he enjoys the camaraderie of being a band of Vikings member. He said, when it comes to competition, everyone works well together out on the field. Seeking some cool shade, Danville High School senior Peyton Blodgett practiced on his tenor drums under a tree in front of the high school. The tenor said, I played bass drum for 2 years, so this is my first time on tenor drums and my second year in the marching band. I like the family atmosphere of the drumline, he said, adding with a kind of a joke, and I like banging on things. Peyton further explained why marching band is special to him. I like going out on the field with the lights on you, he said. I like creating music for family and friends. During the 2-week marching band camp, every member of the band of Vikings practiced over and over their part of what would become a choreographed competition routine. The band also performs the Viking fight cheer, the Saarsanger Bander, pep band tunes in the stands and during halftime at home football games, as well as in the Labor Day and Night of Lights parades. This year's Band of Vikings is a mix of seasoned band members and new ones, said Kropf. During the first year of marching band camp, the band members practiced the basics, such as body movement and posture, and learned the music that accompanies the competition routine. This week of band camp consists of drills and choreographing the formations for their competition routine and will culminate with a field trip Friday to Indianapolis to watch the top 40 collegiate and high school drum corps in the United States, Canada, and Japan compete during the Drum Corps International World Championships. Kropf said, "We're digging into the show as hard as we can. The routine that the Band of Vikings will perform in competitions this year is titled The Flash Before Your Eyes. The routine starts with a color guard member seeing a reflection of her younger self." Kropf said it's a reflection of a life well lived, adding that the color guard members will wear unique costumes that are half antique looking and half modern. She travels back in time and explores the things in life that she had to fight for, like a career. The music for the show includes Serenata Sir Soprana by Danny Elfman, The Luckiest by Ben Fields, and Coldplay's Viva La Vida. It's amazing to watch 77 kids doing the same thing at the same time, said Director Kropf. It helps when the band is successful and the kids want to do it. When the group of kids want to be here, it makes the program thrive, he added. The Band of Vikings will perform its routine at competition for the first time September 16 at Morton Marching Invitational. That concludes the article about the Danville High School band getting ready for the fall. Now I'm going to turn to the obituary page. The first obituary I see there is Ted Ashcraft, age 69, of Oakwood, died at 1:59 p.m. Sunday, August 6th at Carl Foundation Hospital, Urbana. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at the Kirby Funeral Home, 708 Main Street in Homer. The next obituary is for Mary Emery, age 96, of Danville, who passed this life at 7:20 p.m. Thursday, August 3rd, at Grandview Manor Nursing Home. Per Mary's request, there will be a private service held. Leek and Sons Funeral Home, 304 East William Street, Danville, is in charge of arrangements. The next obituary is for LaWanda, often known as Wanda Irvin, age 87, of Hoopston, who died at 2:10 a.m. Monday, August 7, at Heritage Health. Funeral services will be at noon Friday at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Hoopston, with Pastor Jake Callahan officiating. Burial will be in the Floral Hill Cemetery, Hoopston. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to noon Friday at the church. Burton Funeral Home, 309 East Washington Street, Hoopston, is in charge of arrangements. And here's an obituary for Margaret M. Novick, age 97, of Westville, who died at 6:05 a.m. Monday, August 7, at Presence United Samaritans Medical Center, Danville. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday at St. Isaac Jogues Church, 109 West 7th Street, Georgetown, with Father Deuce Biamonkey officiating. Burial will be in Saints Peter and Paul Cemetery, Westville. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Wednesday at the church. Sunset Urbis Funeral Chapel, 414 South State Street, Westville, is in charge of arrangements. The next obituary is for Donald Sen of Hoopston. Donald Eugene Sen, age 75, of Hoopston, passed away at 2:50 a.m. Sunday, August 6th, at his home. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thursday, August 10, at Anderson Funeral Home, 427 East Main Street, Hoopston. A Masonic service will be held at 12:30 p.m. The funeral service will follow at 1 p.m. Thursday at the funeral home, with Pastor Kathy Najam officiating. Burial will follow in Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Memorials may be made to the Iroquois Memorial Hospice, 200 North Laird Lane, Watseka, Illinois, zip 60970, or to the Kennecook County Park, 22296 Henning Road, Danville, 61834. And that concludes the reading of the obituaries in today's paper. Here's an article about a day of fun coming up on Saturday. Kennecook to serve up burgers and fun. Danville, the Vermilion County Conservation District, will dish up another jam-packed day of cheeseburgers and fun on Saturday at Kennecook County Park. But there's much more going on than a big cookout at the park. Ken Consis, director of the Vermilion County Conservation District, said it's billed as the, quote, largest single-day event in Vermilion County. In past years, he said they've had as many as 8,000 show up at the park throughout the day. Now Consis says they average about 5,000 in total attendance. These numbers are also include numerous other activities and events put on by other area organizations, which Consis said they've since partnered with. He said Cheeseburgers and Fun used to be put on by the district and started as a dedication day for its historic buildings and other sites throughout Kennecook County Park. Consis said the district made a big celebration out of these dedications, with bands playing all day, and it was a big hit. Eventually, he asked the Vermilion County Conservation Foundation if it would take over the event as a fundraiser for its education center. Meanwhile, the Kennecook Roadrunners, who host an 8-hour Howl at the Moon Ultra Marathon on that day at the park, outgrew some of its usual rental sites and a booking conflict arose. Then, Consis decided to make it a one big event and partnered with the running group and a few car clubs. Later, it followed suit. He said some of those clubs have been part of the event for about 10 years. Consis said it's kind of neat how each group takes care of its own needs. The foundation takes care of staging and getting food vendors and everything. And everything works perfectly. He also said, aside from the increased revenue earned, he said it helps give exposure to the foundation. Although donations are welcome, no entry fee is required for the event Saturday, which kicks off with a Howl at the Moon run at 7 a.m. The annual Bunker Hill run will start at 8 a.m. and go into the evening. Consis said for this, the car clubs will tour over the Veterans Affairs Ileana Healthcare System about noon Saturday, where veterans will check out the vehicles and vote on their favorites. Also, starting around noon is the Vermilion Vols Vintage Baseball Jamboree. Consis said they'll play by the rules of 19th century baseball, which is, quote, quite different from what you think it is. He added a similar team from the Macon County Conservation District had helped get the local team started. Since then, the Vermilion Vols have always played for cheeseburgers and fun, Consis said, and this year is one of the event's partners. Starting at 11 a.m., attendees can enjoy both a chainsaw carving demonstration and an antique auto and tractor show. Food vendors were also open at that time. Rodman Rail, a band playing a variety of Americana tunes, will open the stage at 2 p.m., followed by Left 4 Dead at 5 p.m. and Lady Luck at 8 p.m. The cheeseburger cookout begins at 3 p.m. and includes an 80-90% lean burger with or without American cheese, with condiments available. The $6 cheeseburger meal also comes with chips and a soda. Consis said in the earlier days they were making all the burgers on Weber Grills and it was based out of the Lori Barn. Then we'd only have about 300 people. Kennecook County Park is located west of Danville on Henning Road. That concludes the article about the party coming up on Saturday. I'm looking now at the opinion page and we see here an editorial from the Southern Illinoisan in Carbondale. It's titled Midwest Voices, Enough with the Games in Springfield. We wish we could say we were shocked. We wish we could say we didn't see this coming. Just weeks after taking a minor step toward normalcy, Illinois state government shot itself in the foot once again by failing to act in a responsible enough manner to allow K-12 students to attend school this year. That's not a really high bar to set. Governor Bruce Rauner issued an amendatory veto on the school funding bill last week, putting school kids in the middle of an ongoing political squabble between the legislative and executive branches. After years of legislative haggling, the Illinois General Assembly finally crafted a school funding bill, Senate Bill 1, that legislators vowed as equitable enough to pass. By and large, school superintendents supported the legislation. The abridged version of the bill, it divorced school districts from relying totally on tax funds generated by local property taxes. Virtually everyone agrees with that basic premise of the bill. In the meantime, Governor Rauner's position on the bill waffled. At times he appeared supportive, at other times he threatened to veto the measure. The Democrats used his shifting positions as an excuse not to put the bill on Rauner's desk. And here's the sticking point. Pensions for Chicago public school teachers. The bill contained a $250 million block grant for the Chicago Public School District, as well as pension funding for teachers in that district. In the past, the district has self-funded pensions, the only district in the state that does so. This is the music that set up the ensuing political dance, and in this instance, it took two to tango. Both sides tripped over themselves, making everyone look bad in the process. The Republicans called the funding for Chicago schools a bailout. Democrats used that rhetoric as an excuse to allow the unsigned bill to languish for 2 months. And when the bill finally arrived on the governor's desk, he uses a mandatory veto to carve out the funds for Chicago schools. In delivering the veto, Rauner seemed unaware that it takes legislative supermajority to uphold the veto. So getting a simple majority in the General Assembly these days is a chore. A supermajority for a bill that receives minimal Republican support is a pipe dream. Springfield's reaction to the latest dust-up between Republicans and Democrats has been predictable. Finger-pointing. Seriously, that's the best we can do. If we actually had a funding mechanism to send our kids to school, hopefully one of the things they'd learn in the primary grades is to take responsibility for their actions. That's a lesson that could certainly be implemented around the state capitol these days. Before Rauner's actual veto, there was a glimmer of hope that the state would actually function. Both sides seemed to agree that one of the revenue streams for Chicago public schools could be removed and debated at a later date. That was a rational, lucid, adult approach to a problem that shouldn't be insurmountable. So what happened? How did we get from there to the possibility of schools being unable to operate, despite the fact that Illinois actually has a budget and money to distribute? Please, Springfield, enough with the games. The citizens of Illinois have been political pawns in this charade long enough. It's bad enough that state services have been curtailed and state employees have lost their jobs. But to throw school children into the middle of a political argument that could be resolved at a later date, that's simply unconscionable. Because two adults can't play nice, school children stand to suffer. We deserve better. The kids deserve better. Yet, this is Illinois. We're not surprised as it has come to this. And this was published in the Southern Illinoisan in Carbondale. Here's something from the schedule for the Georgetown Fair. Here are the grandstand events. Today, there's a talent contest at 7 p.m., $3 for adults and $1 for children. Wednesday, tomorrow, there's a tractor and truck pull at 6 p.m., $8 for adults, $4 for children 11 and under. And on Thursday, there's a barnyard tractor pull at 6 p.m., $3 for adults, $1 for children. And Friday is the rodeo, 7 p.m., $12 for adults, $4 for children. Finally, on Saturday is the demolition derby at 5:30, $12 for adults, $5 for children. And that concludes my reading of the Danville Commercial News for today, Tuesday, August 8th. This is Don saying goodbye for now, and I look forward to reading for you again at some time in the future.